Session number 12678, Mr. Ernest Jones, Reel 5.
Mr. Jones, Reel 5, we've just got to where you joined the 3rd Battalion Shropshire Light Infantry at Pembroke Docks. What sort of reception did you get?
Well, we were paraded as soon as we got there, and so many were kept at Pembroke Dock, and I and a party of others were sent to Golden Hill Camp at Pembroke. And that was where we were stationed until we went abroad.
Now, what was that camp like, Golden Hill Camp?
It was just outside the town of Pembroke, and I used to enjoy that because I was there, 3 weeks or a month, and I used to enjoy that because we always went to church parade in the main street in Pembroke, and of course at that time we always paraded in our best uniforms and belt and sidearms with the bayonets, you know, hanging at the side, and we were glad to show off how smart we were, you know, before the public of the, in the main street, when we were drilled and marched into church, and then when we came out, of course, we were drilled and marched off with the band, and it was quite an occasion. I just loved it.
Were you getting better at getting your kit ready now?
Pardon?
Were you getting more used to getting your kit and uniform very
yes,
smart?
Yes, we were fully trained then.
Did you ever win this?
Except now we had extra training of more bayonet fighting and also throwing live Mills bombs.
What was that like? Where did you do that at?
Well, we had what they called defensible little, where there was trenches. We went out about, half a mile or a mile outside the town, and there was a maze of trenches and one thing or another, and it was more an assault place, like from trench warfare. And on one occasion I was dealt with another man. There was a sergeant, officer, sergeant, and two of us. So we got it, it was our first turn, we got to throw live Mills bombs. Of course, we'd thrown tin cans with concrete in before, but now we were come to the actual thing. And I went, and of course we were taught how to throw out of a trench, which is a bit different to throwing in the open ground where you got room, you know. So anyhow, that way there was a special technique of throwing out of a trench. I can't explain it very much, but it was a bit different. You couldn't swing your arms about that much in the trench. And I threw mine. Of course, as soon as you throw the mill bomb, you just duck down till it exploded. Well, and then, of course, the other chap come in, and I was standing there by the officer. And we were in, you know how trenches are with the zigzag, you know, and we were in the fire bay, as they call it, which is the front bay. The others are more communications with fire bays. And I was standing there with the officer, and the other chap coming to throw his bomb, and the sergeant was the other side of him, and this chap, I don't know whether he was nervous or what it was, but anyhow, when he got his Mills bomb in his hand and pulled the pin and put his arm back to throw the bomb, caught his arm at the back of the trench and dropped his Mills bomb. On the same, the officer gave me a big push round the corner and the sergeant pulled him out and went round the corner until it had exploded. That was a bit of an experience. It was
Were you nervous throwing live Mills bombs?
I don't think I was to that extent. It was a bit different to the old in a tin can, but you knew you'd got something live in your hand, and of course when you pulled the pin out, you were holding the lever down. You see, and of course, as soon as it left your hand, the lever would fly off and detonate the bomb. And in 5 seconds, it would explode. Well, and that was it. And then we had special... there was so many of us were picked out. And we were given a special course of bayonet fighting.
What was that? What was different about it?
Well... there was no difference actually in the procedure, but I can't hardly explain the different little movements, you know, and being quick on things. You see, you've got to be that quick on the things. Different to when it was when we first did bayonet drill, and we were formed into a proper bayonet fighting group, you see. Well, we went out when it come our turn. You see, we paraded for called the names out for draft. We were called out and we were given...
Hang on a minute. Was there any other special training while you were at Pembroke? I know you were only there a month, but did you do anything else?
No, not really, no.
No tactical training?
No. We were supposed to be trained then, so that was taken for granted. We did a few route marches and different things like that while I was there, you know, and PT and that, you know, but no actual difference to the training we had at Prezeath. Because we'd gone down really fully trained.
And you were waiting for draft. Was there anywhere you wanted to go or didn't want to go? I mean, did you have any opinions about where you were being sent? I mean, I know you couldn't influence
No, we had no idea at all. And we were called out and we were for this draft, what was supposed to go in a few days, and we were issued out with pith helmets, drill khaki and shorts. So we knew we were going out east somewhere. Well, then we asked about leave. Commanding officer told us that he was afraid we couldn't have leave because we were down for draft in 3 days and he couldn't risk anybody leaving, you know. So anyhow, the 3 days come and went, and then we had a spokesman, one chap that was took on himself as a spokesman for us. And he went to see the commanding officer and told him that we'd had no leave, you see, these single chaps had no leave at all. And so the commanding officer said, as soon as I hear, he said, the draft has been cancelled now, he said, but you're liable to go any day. He says, I don't know what day you're going. If I hear that it's been cancelled for any length of time, I'll let you go on leave. And we waited about 3 weeks after then, waiting to hear whether the draft was cancelled. and we heard nothing at all. We kept on asking, but no, we got nowhere. Until they come, they we'd on parade one morning, and such a draft, a parade, fully equipped, you see, and in serge, not with helmets and drill cock. So we were in serge, and we paraded this day, and he said, you go in the morning. And so at 9 o'clock in the next morning, we were marched down to the Pembroke Dock. There we joined another party that was coming with us, and we were marched off to the station and away. We went to Devonport, and we joined the SS Britain. It was a fairly big ship with two funnels, and then
that was in August 1916.
That's right, yes. And we started off away from England just in the evening. And I remember we were all lined up on the deck to see the cliffs of Dover or cliffs of wherever it was and receding from us and going out to sea. And then we were told we were issued out with hammocks to go down below and fix ourselves up for sleeping. What a palaver with the hammocks. Oh dear, who could hang them up all right, but get into them? Oh no, not on your life, we couldn't get into them. If you got into them, you couldn't stop it. Oh, in fact, in desperation, I took a blanket and went up and lay on the deck. And I did for the rest of the journey. I went up on deck, slept the night on a blanket on the deck. But
was it very crowded on the mess deck or the troop deck?
Yes, I don't know how many were on, but it was fairly full up. And during that voyage, the second day that we started off, we were paraded, and of course it was a case I was at the end of the ranks, and there was 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, U10, right turn, quick march. And I happened to be one of the 10. And we were put on submarine guard. Now then, we were issued out with extra ammunition, and we were posted on the side of the decks, either side of the ship, and we were told to look out for anything, like a periscope in the water. And our orders were to fire at the periscope, and if we couldn't hit it, splash the water up round it to stop anybody seeing through it. That was the orders we got. But I'm afraid we never saw a periscope.
How long were you on a stint?
10 days.
No, how long were you on guard, periscope?
All the time. We were never relieved. Except at night, of course, it was no good at night. We were all
so you did
night.
It all day?
But yes, I was there all day.
Did you have any trouble with seasickness at all?
No, not going out. It was like the Mediterranean was like a mill pond. And we called it Gibraltar. And just about a few hours and off again.
Did you get ashore at all?
No, we weren't allowed off the ship. And then we called it, we run into St. Paul's Bay at Malta. And no, we couldn't get off the ship. We weren't anywhere near, we were anchored off land. But on this journey, there was a doctors on board, like there were some different officers going with us, and doctors and something going, and anyhow, we had a lecture on board, and my word, it was some lecture. All about VD, gonorrhea, syphilis and all the rest of it. And I tell you what, that doctor put the wind up me. Oh, good Lord, I thought, good Lord, if ever I got anything like that, I could never go home. And it gave me a profound effect, you know, to think that if I got anything like that, how could I go and face my mother and that? And I always remember that home, the army life and everything. Oh no, I wouldn't risk anything like that. And but of course, in fact, I hadn't got the money if I wanted to. And I was never in the place really, well, you know, long enough to go as other chaps went. But there was no time, you see.
Now, what else happened? Anything else happened on the voyage?
No, it was a very eventful voyage. Uneventful voyage. And we landed in 10 days. We went into the... We were going up the... in the Aegean Sea and going past the Greek islands and... I remember there was a ship, we saw a ship half out of the water, and we were told that it was a few days ago that ship had struck a mine, and it was full of mules, and they let all cut all the mules loose and all that, and a lot of them swam out to sea instead of then going towards land, and were drowned, and you know, that was what we were told, anyhow. And then, of course, we come up into the Bay of Salonika, and we landed there, and we was...
What were your first impressions when you landed?
Well, of a country so very different to England, you know, everything, and, of course, it was hot, too. It was... tremendously hot because we were in surge, and all the other troops as we saw were in drill khaki and some helmets was at the base, and we had to march. I thought it was about 5 miles. They said it wasn't that much, but I thought it was about five miles. We marched through the city and out the other side and up the Monastir Road and got to the base camp, and it was Summerhill Camp.
Summerhill?
About 2 miles outside Salonika.
And what was that camp like?
Well, it was a tremendously huge camp and totally different to a camp in England in that... things seem to be so different.
In what way?
Well, I can't hardly explain that, because we were in a foreign country and everything seemed, you know, different to what it would be in England. Why? I don't know. I can't explain why. But and among troops with the pith helmets on and drill khaki and shorts and that and nuts in our putties and long trousers and serge with our caps. Well, we felt different.
Was it a hut camp or tents? Huts or tents? Was the camp huts or tents?
Oh, huts then. Yes, had huts. And
what were you doing while you were there?
Well, we had parades and route marches. We weren't there many days, and we were Anyhow, our kit had kit inspections, and our kit was made up for anything as we hadn't got and all the rest of it, and charged against us. We had to put charge down for to be deducted from our pay anything we'd lost.
But you weren't given some tropical kit?
No.
Still in your surge?
Still in the surge, yes. And then after a time, I went to... Now this is where it comes, as you mentioned, about the stick. Now...
Oh, well, tell me that story.
I was put on guards. You see, I happened to be picked for guards. I don't know why. Other chaps were getting away with it. And I was with... But I always tried to get right-hand man, because I was mustered at fixed bayonets and unfixed. You know, the right-hand man takes a pace forward, you see, and he gives the orders. The NCO's there, and he gives the orders when the right-hand man has marched forward in front of all the rest. And then the orders come, fix. And you take your rifle and put it between your knees, you see, and your hands on the, there, and...
on the barrel.
That's right, and your other hand on the top of the bayonet scabbard. And then, as he gives the word bayonet, so up comes the bayonet, put on, you see, and then the right-hand man watches to see that everything's right and presses it down, which gives a click on the fixing, see. And so he's the one that is controlling the fixing. And I always, if I could get the right-hand man, I always got the stick. Well, the stick was that you didn't do guards at night. You see, you were the CO's orderly, and you were running messages. That was where the stick was.
And how would you prepare to get the stick?
Well, I don't know if you prepared, but you've got to be pretty smart. You know, you've got to stand out among the guard to get the stick. And usually Sergeant Major was watching, you see, and he'd say who it was to be, you see. And if I could always get the right-hand man and be into the fixing, I always got it. I couldn't always get there, somebody else would get there first. But whenever I did, I got the stick. And I...
What sort of messages would you be carrying? I mean, would that be... Would you have
The CO would send round to the cookhouse, you see, for the Ed Cook, you see, to see him at such a time, and then it'd be they could go to the quartermaster stores of such a part of the camp, you see, and order the quartermaster that he must see the CO at such a time, and different things like that, you know, with between one or another, he was, you know, on the go. But of course, your nights, you were not, you were all right. Once or twice you were fetched out at night just to run a message or something. But on the whole, you just had a good night's sleep instead of two on and four off. What we used to do on the guard.
What was it like on when you were on the guard, when you didn't get the stick? Would you be marching round at all?
Oh, yes, you'd be like on the perimeter of the camp. You see, you'd have a walk, you see, so far, you see, and you'd meet another coming the opposite way, you see, and then you'd walk back again, you see, and then you could order arms and stand for so long, you see, but not too long. You've got to st- stipulation that you were to be on the move pretty well, you see, and not to, because we were told that there were comitagists about.
What were they?
They were brigands in the mountains, see. We had that more when we were in the battalion. And they'd kill anybody for their boots. And they were brigands that had lived in the mountains. And so we, yeah, but...
That's what you were guarding against?
They'd come in and steal stores, you see, or anything of that. But I never saw them. But it was known that they did, and that they had done. So we had a guard round the camp, you see, for that purpose. That was when we were up the line, on rest.
But at the moment you're at Sunny Hill. Did you do anything else at the Sunny Hill base depot?
Well, at the base camp, and then we were called that there was all KSLI men on parade, you see. And then, of course, all the KSLI men would go, and it was really our draft that were there. And we were paraded, and then we were parted, so many this side and so many that side. Now, that party went to the 2nd Battalion, which was on the Struma front. You see, and then this party that I was in went to the Dorian front, which was the 8th Battalion. You see, now the 2nd Battalion were on the Rupel Pass and on the Struma. We were on the Vardar and Derain, Lake Derain, and there. So, but this, the Dorian front, was the main front. That was more a sidekick, you see, to stop them coming down the Rupel Pass. And they were on a plane. And they had a lot of mosquitoes. There was a lot of damp ground, you know about, and they were in a terrible mess in the summer. They had to withdraw from there to the higher ground at the back, which was a couple of miles. And they had cavalry there. And that was the only place that they were in Salonika. It was only flat ground, really. And but we were on the foothills.
Now, how many were in your draft to the 8th Battalion about?
Oh, what would they be now? About 30.
So you were paraded and split in two. What happened
and
next?
And then, we were marched away and were told that we got a parade at such a time. You see, and then the others went, I don't know what happened to the others, but we were paraded to parade full kit, you see, and everything and that at such a time. And we marched from there, from the base camp, to Doodala, which was where the railway started. Now, that railway was built there by the Royal Engineers and went up country. You see, and it was more or less, there were trucks, you see. It was more or less a goods thing, like covered wagons and that there. Well, the covered wagons were used for casualties, bringing back, you see, down to Salonika, to the hospitals. And we were in this train, and we got up to, we went about, I should think it was 8 o'clock in the evening, light, and we got to Doodala, and we were kept there for a bit until the train came, and then we were getting these trucks and that, and There was such a terrible lot of waiting about. You know, you get in the thing thinking you were going off there, you'd be an hour sitting there waiting for the train to start. And then, of course, it'd have to be getting dusk before they'd start. And it had got to be properly dark when they got up the line, you see, because they were overlooked so much. And we got to Karasuli at 3 o'clock in the morning.